Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adesk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Wednesday, February 8th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Oh, Melody.
Wendy Wilson will be here in just a few short moments, right after I do the market report. We had another decent day for gold today. The New York spot price after market up $6, $1,240. It was there most of the day. Turned on the news bright and early this morning. It was up 10. So we did have a high of 1245 on the day, and it came down a little bit, up 6 at 1240. Saw the same type of trading for silver, up 0.07 right now at 1784. Platinum was up 11 at 1019, and palladium was up 5 at $772. Pressure on the dollar today, 0.14 to the downside at 100.27, and crude oil was up 0.28 at 52.45. Paper markets today, the Dow was down 35 points, but still above 20,000 at 20,054. The NASDAQ was up 8 at 5,682. The S&P was up, 1 at 22.94. 10-year yield, 2.35%, down 0.04. And the euro is still 107, up 0.06. European Asian markets basically unchanged overnight. So there we have it. We'll be talking much more about the markets and the financial reports that came out today. First, we have Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs joining us. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about some risky drug combinations that people may not realize they're putting themselves at risk. Actually, scientific studies have been proving prescription meds can be more dangerous than previously thought. And it's not about the medical errors or the patients not taking their medicines properly. This is about the drugs themselves offering some serious, often deadly changes to the human body. Now, in June 2015, there was a journal article in The Lancet that stated 95% of the world's population had some kind of health problem, and a third of the population had more than five ailments, which translates into a minimum of 1 to 3 prescribed medications. Also, when we combine drugs, it can offer us some serious health risks. So I thought we'd take a look at a few of them. In 2016, there was a study in the Journal of the American College of Cardiology that said some prescription drugs can be very dangerous when combined with other prescription drugs. They also stated that all drugs are toxic. So what science is really doing is managing symptoms with controlled toxicity. So often the drug treatments can fail predominantly due to the drugs poisoning the liver. Now, the study that was done at Columbia University Medical Center, and it involved the Data Science Institute, amazingly, their researchers said that deadly drug reactions and interactions may or may not be well known to doctors, drug companies, or patients. So in their study, they found there was a minimum of 8 drug combinations responsible for deadly heart events. So the drugs can weaken a sick cardiovascular, they said, or they could corrupt a healthy one. So how do these drugs accomplish that? Well, according to the research, they disrupt the electrical impulse to the heart and patients die. But patients aren't told that drugs can actually change their metabolism, and change proteins and how they function, let's say inside your heart muscle. Two of the 8 drugs that they pointed out were if you combined a very popular antibiotic called Rocephin with a heartburn drug called Prevacid. It'll stop your heart in a skinny minute. You combine those two. Anybody hear that in the news?
No, we don't hear it in the news. And when you said there's 8 of these, you don't mean that 8, you have to be taking 8 different drugs. You mean there are 8 pairs.
8 combos, yeah.
Yeah, 8 individual, okay.
Yeah. Well, here's a quote from Nicholas Tatonti. He's a PhD professor at the Biomedical Information Institute, Columbia University Medical Center. He says, with regard to diabetes, I've been frustrated that after finding dangerous drug interactions that raised blood sugar, there was a lack of interest in this discovery. So I shifted my research to deadly heart drugs instead. End of quote.
And is there still a disinterest in the research?
Well, apparently you didn't hear what I just reported.
Yeah.
According to Robert Woosley, he's a medical doctor at the National, he's a national drug expert. He says drug interactions occur often, but they go unrecognized, and we need better methods for detection. So,
well, you know, that does raise an interesting question. Do the people who deal like coroners, are they trained to look for these drug interactions as a cause of death?
Well, a lot of times they will not put a cause of death on a death certificate until they run the toxicology, which they'll take body fluids and they'll send them off for a course of, you know, exams. But it depends on what they're running, if they can find any specific element. So they have to actually be looking for the smoking gun to find it, if you know what I mean.
I do.
So a lot of times the medications can cause an event, and sometimes the coroners do pick up on that, and they do put that on the death certificate, heart attack due to, you know, and they'll list the medicine, you know, interaction of medicines, or, you know, failure to implement medication properly, whatever the cause. But they do cite some medicines. One of the big things that they see is young women in their 30s that are on the third generation of birth control. It causes blood clots, and usually they have embolisms and die. So
are you saying that by taking birth control,
yeah,
you actually altered the genetics of your child, and if your child takes birth control, their genetics are further altered and passed on to their, what would be the grandchild, and the grandchild becomes more genetically more prone to blood clots?
I don't know if it has so much to do with the influence through the generations. It could be, but basically you got a third generation of drugs that have been, you know, modified and changed. So now, you know, your risk of blood clotting is higher. So I think it has to do with the drug formula, to be honest. I think it somehow messes with your hormones, which help regulate the fibrinogen element of the blood. And the fibrinogen, if it gets off and becomes more fibrin, you get more clotting. So I think the drugs influence that. But getting back to the common medicine, in 2010, there was another study, University School of Medicine in Indiana, reported on drugs that cause long-term cognitive impairment. So their findings were published in the 2010 Journal of Neurology, and the drugs they identified are called anticholinergic drugs. And what they do is they block the acetylcholine, which is a neurotransmitter in the brain. So these drugs, if you take them for, let's say, 60 days, you're going to have memory loss. You're going to have cognitive problems, right? Now, a lot of this is from statin drugs do the same thing, because it removes the cholesterol, which is part of a neurotransmitter, so you get memory loss. But here's your acetylcholinergics are in a lot of over-the-counter medicines like Benadryl. You got a serious allergy problem? Dramamine, Excedrin PM, Nitol, Sominex, Tylenol PM, and Unisom, a lot of these over-the-counter sleep meds. Now, if you get an anticholinergic in a required prescription form, you'll find it in drugs like Paxil, Detrol, Demerol, and Elavil. So if you're on these long-term, 60 days, you're going to start forgetting things. Dr. Noel Campbell, clinical pharmacist at Winsard Health Services, he said, we found that if you're taking one anticholinergic, significantly increases the individual's risk of developing cognitive impairment. If you're taking two of them, these drugs double the risk. A seemingly benign medicine can cause or worsen cognitive impairment, cause delirium, and memory loss. So dementia may be because of what you're taking. you know.
Does your memory come back if you eliminate?
In a lot of cases, it does. If you stop the medicine, your cognitive function returns. So yeah, you do want to watch what you're taking. One doctor, Dr. Bustani at IU School of Medicine, he says he tells his patients to avoid these drugs. He encourages his patients to talk with their doctors about any medication they're prescribed to take. So you got to really look into stuff because a lot of these anticholinergics, aside from being in allergy meds, insomnia medicines, or motion sickness drugs, or depression medicines, it's also in prescription drugs for bladder urgency and leakage. It's in hypertension medicines, like I mentioned. It's in cardiovascular disease meds and obstructive pulmonary disease medications. So it's there. So you really have to watch out what you're taking. Now, there's also some heart medicine. This was huge. I thought this was huge. A study at the University Hospital Case Medical Center in Cleveland, Ohio, in 2010, they found that your common blood pressure medicines increase your risk of cancer. Dr. Ike Safani and his colleagues at the University Hospital Heart and Vascular Institute found that your anti-angiotensin receptor blocker drugs prescribed for high blood pressure, for heart failure, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, kidney disease, increase your risk of cancer by 8 to 11%. And it also, specifically, he said, increases your risk of lung cancer by 25%. So they were published in the journal Lancet Oncology. So there's some drugs out there that could give you a second type of disease. So you got to be real careful.
How long do you suppose you have to take one of these drugs, for example, that you were just talking about, that'll increase your risk of lung cancer by 20%. Are we talking about taking it for 30 days or for 5 years?
Well, typically when you look at studies like this, they say long-term use. And and when you look at Medicine's Dictionary for long-term use and what pharmaceutical companies consider long-term, it's 12 months.
Okay. You're kind of saying there, you're implying if we're going to do long-term use, you're implying that maybe we're dealing with an over-the-counter drug that can be picked up. No, it's definitely prescription drugs.
The ones for the cancer are the prescribed ones. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, those are angiotensin receptor blocker drugs. Those are by prescription. So, yeah. But you got to research. The whole thing is you really have to look into, and with the internet, it's so easy. And even if you don't have a computer at home, you can go to the library and you can look up stuff. And even if you don't want to do a computer, you can get a physician's desk reference at the library. And this is a big book. It's huge. It's bigger than a phone book. And a list by the manufacturing drug company, you can look up your drug that your doctor wants you to take, and you can see everything there is to know about this drug, what the very common side effects and even the rare side effects. So it's important to know what it is you're putting in your system, because what we have is, in this modern world, we have this controlled toxicity through prescription drugs. It's legal, it's popular, it's easy treatment, it's covered by health insurance, and it's an accepted way to treat ailments. But millions of people that are taking prescriptions really are having to put up with the risk and side effects. And one drug, one pharmacist told me, one drug can cause 100 different chemical changes in your metabolism. So if you're on, like the elderly are on 3 to 5 medicines, he says, so that if you're taking 2 medicines, that's 100 times 100 chemical changes, and doctors and pharmacists don't know what those changes are.
Well, and on top of which, they don't much care if they've got something they can sell to the public and make a fast and make a good profit off of it, because the government has exempted them from liability. If the my understanding, they've been exempted from liability if the drug kills them. Well, too bad. We tried.
Well, and, I mean, you can sue the
let
drug.
Let the pharmaceutical industry largely skate.
Yeah, well, with regards to vaccinations, you're correct. But with drugs, you can still sue pharmaceutical companies. A lot of class action suits you see advertised by attorneys on the TV. It's just that they make so much money on the sale of the drugs that lawsuits are just a drop in the bucket, so they risk it. Even if their initial research shows they're going to have problems down the road and probably get sued, they're just going to try to make as much as they can up front, and if they get sued, well, you know, $1 million.
Drag it out for 5 or 10 years, and by the time they collect any money from the pharmaceutical industry, it'll only be worth
a drop in a bucket compared to what they make. Yeah, so that's pretty much the standard MO, and I know it's despicable, but that's right. Why we have to be really proactive with our health, and that's another reason why doctors are all stressed out and have a high incidence of drug abuse and suicide, is because just a generation or two back, doctors were, you know, everybody did what their doctor told them. Now people are questioning, and doctors aren't used to it. They're not used to that. So if your doctor can't sit with you and have a candid conversation about the treatment that's going to impact your life in a serious way, then I'd get a new doctor, for real, you know, because that's important.
Do we have any studies that indicate there are drugs? We know that some drugs in combination cause problems. Do we know about any drugs that in combinations do not cause problems? We're going to say, well, this one's perfectly safe. This other one, I'm not so sure about that one. This one here, we can take that, and there's no adverse reaction. Is there any kind of study to indicate which drugs cause no adverse reaction?
Well, I mean, I think we only find about the adverse reactions when we have a lot of people having a reaction. So I'm sure there probably is some combinations out there that are fine, and we just don't know, have any clinical, official statement to the fact. But, you know, a lot of times you can't even use now herbs with prescription drugs because their herbs can interfere with the absorption. So, if it were me and I had a question about interactions, you might want to have a 2-hour window. Because usually it takes 2 hours for a medicine to get absorbed into the system. So I would space things by 2 hours if I could, just to be on the safe side.
But then what you're saying is take one drug now and take the next drug, if you're taking two or three or whatever, allow 2 hours before you take the next drug and 2 hours before another drug, because then they will have less interaction.
I think so. Yeah, you have. Yeah,
it sounds like if you got to take these drugs, it sounds sensible to do it that way. Why don't you give us some contact information where people can get more information on this problem and place an order with PowerHerbs.com?
Absolutely, we have a free catalog. If you want to check us out, you can call and ask for that at 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663, or you can download the catalog from thepowerherbs.com. And it's Heart Health Month, Al and Melody, so we have 10% off on our heart herb formulas, so people can check that out.
Okay, Wendy, thanks very much. Always informative. That's Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com, 866-229-3663. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
There is such a thing as a D-Lebop.
Yeah.
There is. Well,
you should have a contest to see how many people there are in the audience who's ever heard of a D-Lebop before, and if they can ask if they can define what they are.
Oh, well, maybe we better, like maybe a, we better of, not, because I never really knew what the full meaning is. That's probably something we can't say on the air.
Like,
so let's just move
like
right
a
on.
Snipe. We're going on a D-Lebop hunt.
Let's move on, Al. Let's just really, truly, trust me, let's move on. And so we had a great day in gold today. And it climbed to its highest in almost 3 months. You have the ETFs that have a lot of active purchasing through with investors. So a lot of these people are going to ETFs and still picking up instead of the real physical metal. But this has been the longest buying spree with ETFs since June. The metal has gained in 7 of the past 9 days, and we do have some nice momentum behind gold at the moment. So it seems like the trend from gold is going to be very similar to last year. And so far, since the beginning of the year, we've had a good run in gold. And the technical perspective is also healthy. And there's a lot of demand globally. So it seems like, and we have, just not going to blame the administration, but we have politics that seem to ensure lots of
instability
in this country and around
uncertainty,
confusions, you name it. We'll pick it. So we did have a good the gold price is extended. We also had the first annual gain since 2012. And again, it's a lot of investors are questioning the implications of President Donald Trump, both on his international and domestic policy. So gold producers, 16 of them, rose for a fifth straight day, and that is the longest stretch of gain since August. So, you know, a lot sounds good for gold, and so this just might be the year that we take off. And I do know that in the next month or so, we're going to have Mr. Trump. He's going to have to release his spending numbers, you know, his infrastructure numbers, what he wants to spend on, you know, the bridges and roads and military and so forth. We have a debt ceiling that has to at least be mentioned in March. You have the Brexit again in March. So I think a lot of this is leading up to what ensues after those months to see if they're able to do what they've done in the past. Well, we'll just extend that debt ceiling so, you know, we have more room to spend and to keep this economy going, or will the uncertainty coming from the administration just really allow those numbers to have people finally take a look at it and say, well, golly, we have a debt that can't be paid.
Yeah, I know.
And so whether it's March, whether it's the end of the year, but I think the time for gold to shine although it always shines, it's just going to shine a little bit brighter this year. So, folks, don't get caught up in thinking that everything is going to be okay. Don't get caught up in thinking and getting so distracted by what's going on and the possibilities that things are going to be okay, and forget about what you need to do, because your money is still at risk. And you still have a high risk of losing 50, 60, 70, 80%, depending on how you talk to and what numbers you view, of losing that amount of your money. And no FDIC will be able to cover the amount of funds that are lost in the banks, particularly if these banks get unregulated once again. Once they're I'm not for regulations, particularly, you know, but on the other hand, it did keep the banks from borrowing. Yes, Al?
I'm just thinking there's probably only two classes of Americans that really need regulation. One of them is sex offenders and the other one is bankers.
There's
two groups that can't resist temptation, Melody.
Well, you know, banks used to have a purpose, and they certainly have strayed. And, you know, I haven't looked at the latest numbers on derivatives lately, but, you know, hey, take those regulations off. So maybe they were the wrong regulations. Maybe they can be replaced with other regulations. We'll have to see. But on the other hand, the FDIC will not be able to cover the amount of money that they will be required to in the future. And that's nothing new. I mean, everybody's known that.
No, they won't be able to come close. They have a fraction of a cent.
Yeah.
Two, three banks, and they're done. In the whole country, two, three significant banks. I don't think they have to be major banks, Wall Street banks, just two or three good-sized banks. It'll be enough to wipe out the FDIC's
Absolutely.
Reserves. And then what? What's going to happen to people when they understand? And that's where the understanding will become apparent to everyone. Oh my gosh, my money in the bank is not secure. At which point, everybody's going to try to pull their money out of the bank, and it won't be there. It'll be a panic if and when people realize, holy cow, there's no insurance for my currency anymore. And they'll try to get it out. They'll all try to get it out at the same time, and a few will succeed, and most people will be left with nothing. And the consequences, financial consequences, are going to be enormous, but this is one of the consequences that could flow from the FDIC running out of money, finding out that, oh my gosh, the accounts aren't insured. Then what do you do? I mean, it's crazy enough that you have your wealth tangled up in these paper debt instruments or digital debt instruments, but now they are close. Little trouble, and your paper and digital debt instruments will not be guaranteed, and what are you going to do with them then? It'll be a good time to get your cash out of the bank, and people say, what shall I do with it? And somebody's going to say, why don't you buy some gold? Why don't you buy some silver and watch and see what happens to the price if and when we see that moment when FDIC goes bust. Got an article here from Business Insider, and it's entitled, Trump reportedly called his national security advisor at 3 a.m., to ask if the U.S. wanted a strong or weak dollar. All right. In an earlier interview with the Wall Street Journal, Trump said the strong dollar was killing us. This is something he'd been talking about even before the election. He says our companies can't compete with Chinese companies because our currency is too strong. A strong dollar is generally good for American consumers because it makes it cheaper for consumers to buy foreign-made products. The dollar becomes more valuable, so you need less dollars to buy products that are made overseas. However, it can also hurt U.S.-based producers who export their goods, because if you're selling overseas and you got to collect for dollars and the price and the purchasing power of dollars is going up, we have a stronger dollar, people can't afford to buy American products. And so they don't. So it's bad for exporters, American exporters, if the dollar gets stronger, but it's good for consumers. How are you going to weigh that? How shall you weigh the balance? If it's bad for exporters, it'll be bad for employment, probably. Okay. Recently, Trump's team has attacked China and Germany for what it believes are improper tactics to devalue their currencies against the dollar. And this goes to that teeter-totter analogy that I've talked about on the program fairly regular basis for the last couple of months, and point out that the relationship of the dollar, fiat dollar, to the half a dozen other currencies that are in the U.S. dollar index is a teeter-totter relationship. When the dollar goes up in value, the others go down. When the others go up in value, the dollar goes down. When the dollar has become stronger, and the dollar doesn't just become stronger because our economy is improving, it becomes stronger because the other half dozen currencies on the other end of the teeter-totter, they are inflating and becoming worth less, either by all economic forces or actual political manipulation of their government, because they want to sell their products overseas. That means they've got to have cheaper dollars, especially if they want to sell into, or cheaper yen, cheaper euros, whatever, if they want to sell into the U.S. market, and they do. So they need inflation, but if they get it, we have deflation, which means our currency becomes more valuable. So Trump is beginning to face that problem. He said the dollar was too strong, and he was going to do something about it. But last night, President Donald Trump called National Security Advisor Mike Flynn at 3 a.m. in the morning to ask about the economic impact of a strong U.S. dollar. Reportedly, Trump asked Flynn whether the strong dollar was good or bad for the U.S. economy during an early morning phone call. According to sources, Flynn said he was not sure and Trump should ask an economist instead. Now, I can understand that the national security advisor might not, it's not necessarily his ballpark to be worried about whether the dollar is getting stronger or weaker and which one is best for the economy. And the truth is neither. Neither is best for the economy, all right? And it's hard to even say that one is better than the other. It's not just a question of getting your cleanest dirty shirt. These are dirty shirts, and they flow from the fact that we have a fiat currency, all right? And we've talked a couple of times, about if the dollar inflates, that's great for debtors because they can pay off their bills with cheaper dollars. Again, if you've ever bought a house, you're probably encouraged to do so. People explain to you, take out that mortgage for as much as you think you can handle, because long term there'll be inflation, and the inflation will let you pay off that debt with cheaper dollars, and it won't count for much toward when you get toward the end of the mortgage. Won't be much of a strain to come up with that money. We've been encouraged to believe that there's going to be inflation, but if there is, the inflation is great for debtors, but it's terrible for creditors, right? It robs creditors. Somebody lends you $100,000. By the time you pay it off, they only get $90,000 in purchasing power in return. The creditors are being robbed. And most people are borrowers rather than creditors, so they say, that's great, rob those creditors. But the truth of the matter is, these creditors didn't get that money by being idiots or by being irresponsible, at least not most of them. And if we're going to impoverish the people who are capable of being productive, we're going to pay a price for that. But if we turn around and we do deflation instead of inflation, deflation is great for creditors because now the borrower has to pay off his loan with more valuable dollars. The creditors are getting over. Inflation is great for debtors. Deflation is great for creditors. Right? But it's terrible for debtors. And if we have inflation, it reduces the value of the dollar. The dollar's already lost 95% of its purchasing power in the last 45 years. If we allow inflation to take place, the dollar is going to disappear. It's going to, the inflation will eat away at the remaining 3-5% of the value of the dollar until finally the people wake up and they say, holy cow, these green pieces of paper aren't worth anything. Then we'll see hyperinflation for maybe 18 months, something like that, and then the whole thing, then the monetary system will blow up and we'll need a new one, but the dollar will be dead. Deflation, on the other hand, inflation kills the dollar. deflation kills the government because it's bad, it's terrible for debtors, and the government's the biggest debtor in the world. If we have enough deflation, the government can't pay its bonds, it can't redeem its bonds. When it becomes obvious, apparent, and undeniable that the U.S. government can't make good on its bonds, then all kinds of bad things begin to happen.
Well,
so deflation destroys the government, and inflation destroys the dollar. Which one do you want to go? And Trump is facing that dilemma, and he's just beginning. We know if he's asking his national security advisors, what the heck is going on here? He doesn't know. He doesn't understand money. Not really. He understands the art of the deal. He understands how to wheel and deal and manipulate and do whatever you got to do in a corporate boardroom. But I don't think he understands money yet, although he's asking questions, which means he's trying to understand.
I don't think it's Trump that's facing the dilemma. I think it's the U.S. economy that's facing
but Trump
dilemma.
Will get the blame.
If we go back, in 1984, there was the Plaza Accord. All right? It was signed by what was then known as the G5 nations. It had Germany, West Germany, France, United States, Japan, and the United Kingdom. And this was to force the U.S. to devalue its currency due to a current account deficit.
What year was that? 85.
The European nations and Japan were experiencing enormous current account surpluses as well as negative GDP growth, and it was going to, it was hurting their external trade and the GDP growth to their homes. So they got together and they came up with a Plaza Accord where the U.S. was going to allow their currency to depreciate. So the world cooperated, and this was basically the first time by agreeing to revalue the exchange rate system over a two-year period by each nation's central bank. So this is when they began to intervene in the currency markets. This is why, when you and I talk about inflation and deflation, why it doesn't really, those definitions, by once you start intervening in the currency markets, inflation and deflations are, you may as well throw them out the window because
none of it's real when you talk about the fiat currency.
The United States at that time experienced about a 50% decline in their currency, while West Germany, France, the UK, and Japan saw 50% appreciations. So
that should have been good for U.S. foreign exports. It should have been good for U.S. exports.
That's what it was
about.
The dollar was too strong. This was the first time that you basically had the farmers, manufacturers, hounding the U.S. government, do something, do something. So they did something. But it's also, you can think that this is the first time that central bankers agreed to intervene in the currency markets, the first time the world set target rates, and it's the first time for globalization of economies, and the first time each nation agreed to adjust its own economies. Sovereignty was exchanged for globalization. So where does the U.S. come off saying, hey, China, quit manipulating your rates? We were the beginners of it. We were the creators of it.
Yeah, if anybody's going to manipulate rates,
we'll do the rate manipulation.
You guys are amateurs. You don't know how to do it properly. We're going to take a break, a couple commercials. Be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Melody, I saw an ad from one of your competitors, famous competitor, Peter Schiff. He's advertising that he's selling Silver Eagles for a mere $2.59 over spot. All right? And I didn't see in the ad whether or not he was including free shipping or not. But didn't you tell us yesterday that you were selling them for $2.45 over spot?
Yes, I was. $2.45 over spot. And that's whether you buy one or 20 or 50 or 100 or 500. We give the lowest price right off the top. And I'm not sure, but I know a lot of my competitors will say you can buy them as low as. Well, that means you have to buy 500 or more.
That's right. So I think that's what Schiff is doing for $2.59. I believe his ad is it's for a minimum of 500.
Yeah. So those poor guys who buy, 20 or 100, 200 or 300, you guys get creamed because you're offsetting the cost for those who buy more. So,
The point behind this is that Peter Schiff is recognized and well known and blah blah blah, and he thinks he's giving people a heck of a deal at $2.59.
And then he gets those,
which is evidence that you are giving people a heck of a deal at $2.45.
I'm not complaining about my deal. We do have great deals, and you can buy 1, 500 or 5,000 at this price. So we could probably even help you out if you bought 5,000. We can give it to you even at a lower price. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And I'm just telling you, these are so often these little. No disrespect to Peter Schiff. I don't agree with his views on so forth. He's one that'll tell you what he does is he gets the big money, 500 plus. So he's getting people that can afford $10,000 or more. And then when he has you for your box of Silver Eagles, then he'll convert you and tell you, oh, you should only have 5 or 10% of your assets in precious metals, in physical metal. I got these per certificates. I can sell you these. And then I think you should go into actual stocks, the paper stocks. So you'll get 5 or 10%. That's their advice. You'll get 5 or 10% physical metal, and then everything else after that is paper. So again, that's the sales pitch. So just be aware of it. But we can offer you a much better price at $2.45 over spot for 1 ounce American Silver Eagles. And also we were going to extend the special yesterday, $1,340. Gold is up big today, and we're still offering it to you at $1,340 for Mint State 63, $20 St. Gaudens. So this offer is good till midnight tonight. So give us a call. Visit our website at dgscoins.com. And thank you, Al, for bringing that to the program, because oftentimes I get into and it just becomes, I know.
It's just more fun. It's more fun than a person should be allowed to have.
So, like, did you enjoy yourself?
No, I thought you were. I thought you were. I knew I wasn't enjoying myself, but I thought you were. So I thought that was where the fun was. I thought you were having fun.
I always have fun.
All right. Well, that's important.
I always have fun. And I want to thank all the listeners and clients and friends of Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I have been so blessed. I know a lot of people in their jobs, they like their jobs, but they can't say they've been blessed. I can actually say that I've been blessed, and I do believe I'm here for a reason. So you will always get the truth here at Discount Gold and Silver. But before the break, we were talking about the Plaza Accord, and so I think it's going to be something that we'll see very similar that'll be introduced, a way to bring China in. Now, whether the IMF does it, I believe the IMF is somewhat of the same structure to keep currencies from being rigged and manipulated from their countries, but central banks, but it hasn't done a good job.
I think
job
everybody's
China.
Manipulating their currency as
Absolutely.
Well as they can.
Absolutely.
I think it's this is a big game of liar's poker, and everybody's, oh, you're lying, and everybody else is lying. Look, everybody who's dealing with currencies is lying. Right? Every government, if they're dealing with currencies, of course they're lying. Because they know everybody else is. It's the only defense they've got. What are they going to do? You either lie or you go to war. Shoot somebody, you know? All right, we're not going to shoot anybody. We're just going to lie to them. So, interesting world, but how long can it continue? And part of the point I was trying to make with relative Trump, and I've made it before, he is going to learn soon now that he's caught between a rock and a hard place. And there is no easy exit on this.
He knows how his manufacturing is done overseas. He understands the current currency rate exchange. He knows the difference. He knows what a strong and a weak dollar does for trade.
Then why did he call his national security advisor to ask him which is better?
Don't know.
That's evidence that he doesn't know, or at least he's beginning to realize that his knowledge, he may have thought he knew, and he's beginning to see, oh my gosh, this is more complex, confusing, and contradictory than I had previously supposed. I got to get some advice from somebody. And I don't object to anybody trying to get advice. I think that's...
I don't either. The point to say that he doesn't know is, I mean, you can't run the number of manufacturing that he has in plants all over the world, both him and his daughter, and not know the difference.
I get that. As long as the world is fairly stable, but he's at a point where he's got to choose. Do we do inflation or deflation?
If he doesn't,
he's going to make that choice, and he's going to be criticized no matter which choice he makes. It's not going to work out well because we've been painted into a very unpleasant corner, and that unpleasantness is going to break loose almost certainly.
Well, you're the one who
Trump
brought
administration.
It up. You're the one at all. But if he doesn't know, then there will be people, not me, but there will be people who question his ability as a businessman.
No, I agree. So I agree. He's going to get a lot of flack, and he's going to get an education on top of that, and he will be blamed unless he establishes the real cause for these problems is not Donald Trump. These problems have been building ever since our government decided to have a pure fiat currency. And that was untethered to gold or silver. And that's where the problem started. And they've been going on for at least 45 years. And you can trace them back even to 1933 when they took the gold out of circulation.
What do you think they
it's
had to do?
It's been a slow process. It's been building. But precisely because it's taken so many decades to get us to where we are now, this isn't going to be resolved by someone's going to adjust the unemployment rate or the inflation rate. That's not going to happen. Right, this thing is big and it's huge and has been building for my lifetime, throughout my lifetime, and maybe longer than that. And this is going to be a terrible.
It's been building for hundreds of years. It's been building because you have the bankers. You have the bankers involved. The bankers do what bankers do. They steal from the public, and it's only legal now. But
they bribed Congress to pass laws to make it legal.
Well, even before that. But I mean, our trouble started, and everybody knows the story of the Federal Reserve Bank, and ever since then, and just like the Plaza Accord, they came in after we've gone off the gold standard. They had to create the Plaza Accord in order to start fluctuating the currencies, and the only reason we had to start messing with the currencies is because they took us off the gold standard. So again, it is, nothing can get fixed until they address their monetary system.
Yeah, I know.
Today, Intel came out. They were going to invest $7 billion in a factory in Arizona. They're going to employ 3,000. I'm going to talk a little bit about this tomorrow in my 20 minutes. We're going to go a little bit more into the story because the big headlines is, hey, you know what? Intel's going to invest $7 billion in a factory in Arizona, and they're going to employ 3,000. Let's talk all about the people that they laid off prior to. Everyone over 40 and 50. So they don't have to pay pension plans. They don't have to pay unemployment. They offer them deals to retire, so they don't have to pay them any unemployment insurance. And then they get them in at the 20 and 25 so they can pay them peanuts. And then they can leave them go again when they reach 40. So, again, you know, hey, is it great that a factory is going to be built in Chandler, Arizona, and hire 3,000 people? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is a good deal, you know, for that community. But there's a little more to the story. And, again, what was promised. He met with the chief executive, Brian Zanich. He met with President Trump yesterday. And so what was he promised is, you know, kind of makes you wonder, because they've been laying people off for 3 years.
And they'll keep on. All right. I got an article here from Ms. Shedlock at Global Economic Analysis. And the headline is Amazon plans robotic supermarkets staffed by three people. All right. A big factory. A big grocery store that is so robotized that three people is all it takes to actually be on site. It actually says in the article, it says 3 to 10 per shift. All right, you might have, who knows, 10, 20 people that work the store if it's open 24 hours a day. But and it goes on in the headline, Chinese factory eliminates 90% of humans, defects drop 80%. This is just extraordinary, dangerous. Revolutionary. Trump blames Mexico, China, and even Germany for taking U.S. jobs and for U.S. trade imbalances, and that might have been true 20 years ago. It might have been completely true 20 years ago. But it goes on. The article says his message resonated with voters. People can believe whatever fake news they want, but Trump's theory of manufacturing jobs falls flat under any degree of scrutiny. Now, I don't agree with that. I think it was true that we moved jobs overseas with, we exported our industries when we still had jobs. But here's ZME Science reports that a Chinese factory replaces 90% of its human workers with robots. And as a result, production rose by 250% and defects dropped by 80%. Now, what are we going to do to protect ourselves against robots? If it's possible to see production rise by 250% and defects fall by 80%, the financial imperative to employ robots rather than living men and women becomes just undeniable, inescapable. How do you get around that? If anyone you're competing with, if you're in an industry and your business, your factory, wherever it is you're employed, if it doesn't employ robots and one of your competitors does, you are going to be beaten to death by those robots. The corporations, if they want to survive, if one is doing robots, the others have to. They have to compete with robots. They can't. Again, 90% of human workers, this is in a Chinese factory. We're not talking about 90% of people that are making $50 an hour. We're talking about robots replacing 90% of people that are making $15, $20, $30, $50 a day. All right? They're already cheap, and the robots are even cheaper. Plus, they're 2.5 times as productive, and they are 80% less liable to incorporate defects into their products. It just tells you that these robots, this whole robot thing, is just inevitable, can't be resisted. They're doing a Chinese factory. Amazon, you've already heard about it. It's a little Go grocery store where there's apparently virtually no people inside. You just walk in, take whatever groceries you need off the shelf, and if you've got your little credit card, essentially you swipe it or they scan it, and they know what they can tell what products you've taken, and they charge it. They bill you. You don't have to stop. You know, just put it in the cart, haul it out the door, dump it in your car, and away you go. But there's no clerks working in the grocery store. And they're planning, Amazon is the supermarket they're talking about, is apparently going to cover a floor space of up to 40,000 square feet. And alongside of the robot, it'll be staffed by between 3 and 10 employees, two stories high. Huh? I don't know. And there's nothing to be done to resist this that I'm able to see. I mean, it would be a different thing if people could be as competitive as robots. But what we're learning is that the robots, they are so much more competitive than we are or can be. That the day is coming where there aren't going to be, there are going to be almost no real employees in this country. I would guess maybe 10, 20% of the population might have jobs, real jobs. The other 80% will either be on welfare, unemployed, or have some kind of make work for the government where they go out and they pick up leaves with tweezers. So, oh, I've got a job. I'm in charge of picking up leaves with tweezers up off the ground in the autumn. But this is going to be a revolution in China. China, they're going to knock off 80%, or excuse me, 90% of their employees in one of their factories over there. And it'll go for, they've already got, you know, everybody knows about the population of China. And they're going to put, what, 90% of the Chinese are going to be put out of work. And China will make enough money where they can divide it up among the public. I don't know, but it's one of those, another one of those leaves in the breeze that makes it just undeniable that we live in interesting times. And every one of us, it's incumbent on all of us to get ready, because we are coming at some big trouble. You are, and I am, and Melody is, and so is Donald Trump. And I don't know how any of us are going to easily escape this. You're going to have to protect yourself as best you can. I'm Alfred Adusk. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.